Blog Talk Radio.
It talks about pole shifts and cataclysms here, and we can talk about this right now. Hang on one second. I'm just going to go to it. Comets and other sky events. Pole pole shift, prophecies, world cataclysms, and lost and legendary lands. Okay? And, hang on a second. See if my guest has arrived. No. Yes. Okay, hang on a second. We have George Dixon joining us here, so hang on 1 second. Hi, George. You with us?
Yeah, how are you doing, Leo? I'm with you.
Hi, how are you?
Yeah, okay, I was having some problems, you know, just getting you on the internet, but, you know, with the tele line, it's a lot easier. You know, I can listen to you and talk to you.
Yeah, but I Jeff hasn't called, so I don't know where he is. I don't know if he's aware he's on tonight or not. I didn't talk to him today, but I thought we had confirmed that last week with him, but I don't know. I got something interesting here, George, that I came up with. On pole shifts and cataclysms, it talks about, let's see here. Japanese scientists look to uncover Planet X, okay. If you've ever paid much attention to comets and asteroids before, you will be wise to pay attention to this prophecy. It comes from a psychic with great gifts. A series of comets, a string is coming inward toward the sun. The time frame to watch for will be early 2004, so there is still some time to prepare for the series of events. I don't know, did you hear of any comets coming in 2004?
No, not comets, no. I've heard of dwarf black stars.
Some of these comets are going to hit the sun and will be of little consequence to us personally. However, some of these comets are on a trajectory to hit the moon. A large chunk of the moon will break off and come down and hit the Earth. But that is not the worst. The comet will be close enough to the Earth's trajectory to hit it directly. So much for that one. That didn't happen. This is stuff relating to the Mayans as well. But a near-Earth asteroid, it says this happened in January 2003. An asteroid that behaves something like a second moon to Earth will make its closest approach to our planet next week. And that was in January 6th, 2003. So I don't know if that, you know, I really haven't heard anything about that. In about 600 years, the asteroid may begin looping around Earth like a tiny, distant quasi-moon. Christmas comet, I haven't heard about that. But these are all comets that supposedly came and went, you know. So I don't know, I haven't heard any. The last comet I remember, of course, was Halley's and Hale-Bopp, remember?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Well, no, I remember back in 1995 and 96.
Right.
That there was a couple comets that were picked up by amateur astronomers.
Oh.
And they thought on one it had a double tail on it. So at that time, the Mayans talked about the return of the Purifier, or the Hopis. And they said before the Purifier comes that it's going to be, there's going to be a prelude by the twin stars. And it's funny, I seen the comet, if you want to call it that, in, when it came through, and I seen it in the evening, and then a couple weeks later I was able to see it in the early morning.
Oh.
And you know, it was just really one comet, but it had a double tail on it.
Oh.
Now the following year, I think this is like August 26th of, I'm trying to remember what year it was. Oh yes, 96. And 97. Or it could have been 95, 96, another comet was seen the same date, in the same vicinity, I believe. So, you know, these are just two comets that I know of recently. Besides Halley's Comet came through, and I think that was in 78. You remember that?
Halley's Comet. Yeah, absolutely. But I also remember Hale-Bopp came through in the 90s. I saw that one.
Well, I seen that one on TV. Yeah.
Actually,
but it hit Jupiter.
It was quite bright.
Right.
I saw it when it came around. In fact, I was with a number of other people when we noticed it. I don't have Jeffrey Goodman's phone number, and whether or not he called or not, he hasn't called yet, so I don't know why. But I was wondering, is there any possibility I can call him from here, but I don't. Do you have his phone number by any chance?
I believe what I'll do is I'll email it to you, Leo. Can you get it that way?
I'll have to go into email there to break up the show, but okay.
I just want to, why don't I call him, and I got a conference call line.
Right, just give him a call and have him call in over here if you want, you know, would that
all right,
be all right?
That's what I'll do. Why don't you give me a few minutes, and let me see if I can make a few phone calls now.
All right. Okay, and I'll go back to this stuff here.
Okay.
Some of this stuff, it's pretty. It's rather this whole thing is rather outdated because there's nothing shows the recent goes back to 1999 and up until 2008 was the last sighting. So the last updated was 3/13. 08, so kind of like, not really what we're looking for. I'm sorry that I put you through that. But let me see if there's something else here, because let's see, where is that? I thought I posted it was on the Revelation. Working on it, folks. Sorry, we're kind of like screwed up here tonight. Kind of half expecting. Let's see. I cannot find. I know I marked it. No. Okay. Let me. What I want to do is go into the pole shift prophecies. If we can get there. The last one was Planet X is supposed to be coming through sometime in the near future. And whether that's a comet or Nibiru is questionable. I'm sorry, folks. I'm just trying to I'm trying to locate this this stuff. And it's really too bad the guy hasn't updated this at all for the years. Kind of interesting, though. If you look at Nostradamus, they've got some sites, or they've got a site here. It works of Nostradamus and some of his statements on this time. And it says the Great Mountain century 1 through 69. Not really sure what that means, but it says the Great Mountain round of 7 stadia. Afterwards, peace, war, famine, flood. It will roll far away, sinking great countries, even antiquities, in great foundation. So, whether or not he's predicting a kind of a cataclysmic event here, it sounds like. And in century 2 to 15, shortly before the monarch is assassinated, Castor and Pollux in the ship Bearded Star, the public treasure emptied by land and sea, Pisa Asti Ferrara Turin land under interdict. Don't know. The great star for 7 days will burn. The cloud will cause 2 suns to appear. The big mastiff all night will howl when the pontiff changes countries. I've always had difficulty with Nostradamus.
Hello, Leo?
Yes, how you doing?
Yeah, hi. Jeffrey's going to be calling in.
Oh, he will. Okay.
Yeah, right. He was on the assumption on it was tomorrow night, but well, you know, that's good because you know I do have a few things dealing with the Mayan calendar we could talk about too. It's going to be some nice talk here.
Yeah, sure. No, that's fine. I'm glad he's calling in. I was just reading some of Nostradamus' work relating to this, and it says, "Where all is good, the sun all beneficial, and the moon is abundant, the ruin approaches. From the sky it advances to change your fortune in the same state as the seventh rock," okay?
Mm-hmm.
"And at 45 degrees the sky will burn fire to approach the great new city. In an instant a great scattered flame will leap up, and when they want to have proof of the Normans." I don't know what the hell that talk. This is so difficult to decipher Nostradamus' work, you know?
Mm, yeah.
But he does predict here these catastrophes. One is, he said, "Mabus then will die soon. Will soon die. There will come a people and beasts, a horrible rout. Then suddenly one will see vengeance, 100-hand thirst, hunger, and the comet will run." When the comet will run. So, you know, he's predicting that. "Burning torch will be seen in the sky at night near the end and beginning of the Rhone. Famine, steel, the relief provided late. Persia turns to invade Macedonia." So I don't know. "When an eclipse of the sun will then be, the monster will be seen in full day. Quite otherwise will one interpret it. High price unguarded, none will have foreseen it." So sounds to me like Nostradamus predicted a couple of massive comets here to hit us in this period. But I don't know. So anyway, let me see if a friend of Jeff just joined us. Hang on a second.
Okay. Help.
Hang on a sec.
Hello.
Good evening. Are you with us?
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Yeah, sorry we got confused there about the time of day, the day. We were talking about, I was working on this website that was predicting Nostradamus, some of Nostradamus' predictions, talking about the end of the world kind of things with comets. Asteroids and comets that we're planning to hit. Do you have any of that? Does your work talk about anything from that frame, or is strictly on the Revelation?
Well, when you're talking about what Nostradamus had to say for the end, he was talking strictly from Revelation. He was a student of the Book of Revelation. Most of his material came out of Revelation.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yes, and that's why there's similarities. Yeah, but that's why the people see similarities, and he's got elements. But he took the material in Revelation and kind of portrayed it the way he chose to. And, of course, there are going to be some matchups, but he doesn't have the sequence nor the logic of why this period should be. To me, the most important thing is, why are we going to have this period? And I want a reason other than, you know, the tooth fairy told me so or the Bible told me so. I want to see some scientific support of how is this possible. And in the material in the Bible, it does give you the reason of how this could be possible, because it has a lot of information about comet impacts, and it talks about how there can be multiple impacts. When you're looking at the seven trumpets, for example, in Revelation, and Revelation 8 and 9, is we're talking about multiple impacts during this tribulation period, or the latter part of the tribulation, 3.5 years. And up until a few years ago, you couldn't have multiple impacts. All we knew, and what science was saying, is that impacts occur, you know, every 5 or 10 million years, and then they cut it to 1 million years, and then they started to find craters that seemed to be contemporaneous, and it wasn't just one impact, a comet or asteroid, that took out the dinosaurs. There seems to be several of them, and you could even see National Geographic had a marvelous picture showing how there was like a track going over North America, and then you could see Chicxulub, and then you could see one up in Canada, and you could see how a group of comets or asteroids traveling together in a pod, so to speak, several dropped down, but they were on the same flight path. And then the final convincing of multiple impacts is that we watched some comets here in the last 10 years, and we literally saw comets breaking up. Comet Wasserman, we saw it go into three pieces, and then we pick it up later in its orbit, and we saw five pieces, and then we saw as many as 12 pieces, and we saw this on several comets. So when a comet comes, it's just not a comet all the time. And then the ultimate, of course, was Comet Shoemaker-Levy, which hit a number of years ago while everybody watched it on TV, and there was a train of at least 22 pieces, and in the space of a month, they all slammed into Jupiter, creating tremendous size impacts. So if you have a big comet, using the popular thing, if you have a mother comet, a mother of comets, I'm thinking of Saddam Hussein, the mother of all comets comes in, what it is, it starts breaking up on the way in as it's disturbed by the gravity of the sun and being heated, and it starts to break up, and then you have two or three or more, and then they start to inadvertently strike the Earth. So multiple impacts, now that we understand how comets work, is much more logical than single isolated impacts. And what the Bible presents in the seven trumpets / seven vials is a series of seven impacts that become increasingly severe, but the impacts involve one hits the forest, another one hits the ocean, another one hits the lakes, another one hits the atmosphere, which is much denser than space, and it breaks up in the atmosphere and then rains down. We saw that in the impact, the 1908 impact at Tunguska in Siberia. There have been a lot of shows on that on the History Channel, where it was at least, 1,000-2,000 feet above the ground, and it all broke up, and, of course, you would get all kinds of atmospheric stuff, a scorching, it would still set fires, it would still blow trees down from the point of where it broke up. So comets can break up in a number of places. A comet breaking, hitting the ocean is going to get a tsunami. And in Revelation, we hear about the ocean being disturbed and life in the ocean being disturbed and ships being turned over. See, so there's a logic, there is a reason. Nostradamus, borrowing from Revelation, did not notice the reasons or the logic and just split them up, and you lost the method behind what's going on. That's
for instance, here's one of his quotes in Century 2-41. It says that the great star for 7 days will burn, and the cloud will cause two suns to appear, and the big mastiff all night will howl when the pontiff changes countries. And then the next, he says, during the bearded star's appearance, three great princes will be made enemies, and hit from the sky, peace, earth trembling, pow, timber overflowing, serpent on the bank placed. That's what he's stating there. So it's definitely something that's gonna hit, according to what he's saying. You know, this way.
Well,
but bearded star.
You got that? You know what a bearded star is? Yes.
That's a comet. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, you're getting to know this stuff pretty good, Leo. Yeah, that's a bearded star, and because in the ancient times, a star wasn't the way we use the word today. It was any luminous body in the heavens, and so you needed other words to tell you what kind of star. If it was a wandering star, it was a planet. If it was a bearded or hairy star, now you have a comet. If it flashes forth and it's a falling star, you have a meteorite. So, yeah, he understood how the material in the Bible was phrased, how the ancient world referred to comets and asteroids, and he picked up elements of it, but unfortunately he missed the message or the logic that is presented in the Bible when you have a sequence. I think the last week you were onto this when you were describing and showed you had read this closely, that if you take the seven trumpets and you take the seven vials and line them side by side, you see that they're both talking about the same set of impacts. The trumpets talk about the impacts from the perspective of the earth, and the vials talk about the same seven impacts from the perspective of man, what happens to him. And so we've got two witnesses.
Now here's another quote that's a little more... that's kind of along that line, but it's a little more general. It says, after great trouble for humanity, a greater one is prepared. The great mover renews the ages. Rain, blood, milk, famine, steel, and plague. In the heavens, fire seen, a long spark running. Now, in the heavens, fire seen, a long spark running. Would that be a comet, or would that be, what do you think?
Well, that phrase comes fire in the sky, or in Ezekiel 38, it says 39, that God's going to send fire on Magog. Well, that's just a euphemism. In other words, a popular saying of a blazing comet coming in, because when you see the tail, that's the gases coming out when it's far from the earth and still up in the heavens, but then when it enters the atmosphere, it's got materials that are coming off. You've got carbon all around it, and gases are still coming, and so it's blazing. I mean, you'd see a big fireball coming into the sky.
Well, in the very next stanza, he states that Mabus then will soon die. There will come of people and beasts a horrible rout. Then suddenly one will see vengeance. A hundred hand, thirst, hunger, then the comet will run.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next one, it says, one of the next verses says, burning torch will be seen in the sky at night, nearing the end and beginning of the Rhone, famine, steel, and relief provided late, and Persia turns to invade Macedonia. So I don't know if he's predicting something older that happened, or if he's predicting something that happened in the future, but I don't know. But there's definitely comets all over the place here that he's talking about.
Well, and he's showing that he knows how the ancient world spoke about them.
Right,
and then
right.
The blazing and the flashing. Unfortunately, I wish more pastors and theologians would learn what Nostradamus did, or learn of how you refer to comets in the ancient world. And then they can go back and read the Bible, and it's all over the place in there, miracles that took place in the Old Testament. We got comet activity, and then in Revelation, in the seven trumpets and vials, we have comet activity. So that's it has insight, but you've got to realize that in the Bible, not only is the logic of multiple impacts being stressed and what they do, it shows a greater understanding of these things because we read what happens during each impact. In other words, it tells you that it hits the land, it sets forest fires. One hits the water and the waters are poisoned. Well, we now know that comets like Comet Hartley 2, which NASA photographed last fall, was giving off a considerable amount of cyanide. And people have known that in England, when Comet Halley was to return in the early 1900s, people were buying gas masks and people were sealing up their windows because they figured the tail, Halley wasn't going to hit, but we'd go through its tail, and the tail was probably loaded with cyanide and poison gas, a form of poison gas. And so, yes, the Bible makes a point that the waters are poisoned because if you get the cyanide or any of those chemicals that carry on there, you're going to get water that's poisoned. So constantly what impressed me, trying to look at it from a scientific viewpoint, is that the rationale for these events was provided alongside with the event. Now, you know, if you go to the racetrack and the guy can pick out seven races in a row, that's impressive. It's even more impressive if he tells you why each horse is going to win and give you some background and the logic behind it. Now I'm starting to say, hey, this guy really understands what's going on. And in the Bible, God makes a point that it's he who's letting these things loose. These are his weapons, his mighty warriors, his ministers. He refers to them as ministers of flaming fire, and that he uses comets. Those are his weapons of choice. And he did in a lot of the Old Testament catastrophes, and he's going to do so again at the end times. So this is very impressive.
Yeah, I wanted to add, this is rather confusing. It's very descriptive, but it's rather... confusing is this one. It says, when the eclipse of the sun will then be, the monster will be seen in full day, and quite otherwise will one interpret it. High price unguarded, none will have foreseen it. And is that, that sounded like, are we expecting an eclipse of the sun during the fellowship? And the sun's supposed to go away for 3 days or something?
If you have a big comet with a big gas tail, in other words, some comets, if they were to pass right by the Earth between the Sun and the Earth,
right,
or circle around, they could lay enough gas that it would take a week for it to clear up. They have trains behind them that can be the distance from, let's say, from Earth out to Mars. I mean, you're talking about many, many millions of miles long, some of these trains. And so it could take hours to pass, even days to pass. Plus, it can cause an eclipse by putting enough dust and dark matter that from the perspective of the Earth, it would appear as a eclipse.
And this one here, maybe you can explain this one. He says, the year that Saturn and Mars are equal fiery, the air very dry, parched, long meteor. Through secret fires, a great place blazing from burning heat, little rain, warm wind, wars, and incursions. Does that make any sense?
Read Revelation, they're talking about, in the midst of all the talk of comets in Revelation, is the talk of wars. And they talk of a battle, as you know.
But it says the year that Saturn and Mars are equal fiery. Is he talking about, what is he talking about there?
Well, that's astrology. He must have some meaning on that. I don't follow astrology, but there's a thing. In Judaism, I know that if you see a year of Saturn and Jupiter, and you add the years, the number of days between those 2 years, you get 777, and that has thrilled a lot of people. And in Jewish old ancient wisdom literature says, if you haven't seen eclipses or see them getting darkened, you haven't lived yet. It only occurs so many times. But that's astrology. I can't say anything about that. Now, here's a different one. In that, in Revelation, beyond the comets, there's another event during the Bible that comes back from the book of Daniel, you see, and he's done that. And in Daniel, in Daniel chapter 2, verses 34 to 35 and verses 45, it talks about a stone cut out of the mountain without hands that smote the kingdoms of the world.
Oh.
Now, in Revelation, we hear about the kingdoms of the world being smote. In Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, which is known as the Olivet Prophecy, discussed in all three, we talk about the nations being smote, and we are seeing the impact of the comets coming in. And so now what is this? A stone cut without hand, cut out of the mountain. You want to venture a guess of what that probably is?
Please, yeah.
An what? Asteroid.
Nah, this is the different one. This is the one different one. Remember Mount St. Helens, what happened?
Right.
The mountain, a rock cut out of the side of the mountain without hands, and if you're in the neighborhood, you would have gotten smoke. And so now, on the day of the last day, Battle of Armageddon, when the troops are all gathered around and are coming to make war, which, as you know, I think Ezekiel 38:39 and the battle called Armageddon in Revelation 16 are one and the same. Armageddon properly meaning a mountain rendezvous of troops, which Ezekiel talks about, that what happens is as they go and have Mount Hermon surrounded, where the Jews would have taken refuge up on Mount Hermon, not unlike the Afghanis when they were fighting the Russians going up into the mountains, or even today up into the mountains. If you got comet impacts and the ground is being shaken, you can stir up a volcanic impact. Again, 10 years ago, that was nonsense, but now there are a number of geologic papers being presented, different times in the Earth's history when there was comet activity followed by volcanic activity. And so conceivably, you get a big impact, and you get producing, and you set off some volcanoes. Now, it just so happens that Mount Hermon, on which the highest peak is Mount Zion, because in Revelation 14 they see Jesus on Mount Zion, and it's not the little hill in Jerusalem, and he's with 144. I don't know if you could put 144,000 people on the hill, little hill of Jerusalem, but that's the highest peak of Hermon. The Bible says that. And so now if you get impacts, and the guys picture this, this is one of my little scenarios or fantasies, that they're marching up the Banias Valley, which is the start of the headwaters of the Jordan, and the next thing you know, there's a Neue Ardant. That's the lateral blowout. Now, you can't have a Neue Ardant anywhere, but it turns out that there is an old Neue Ardant crater, much like on St. Helens, sitting right there at the head of the Banias Valley. And so it's like guys marching to their doom, because if that blows out, when those guys or these kingdoms are marching up that valley, they're going to be very hot. And so there's a passage in Zechariah saying that, you know, it's terrible, their eyes melting in their sockets and tongues melting in their mouth. And that's always been presumed to be a cosmic impact, but no, a cosmic impact, they would be dust. But in the new Ardant, which only, you know, can get up to 1,000.
More like nuclear impact, actually, something like that.
Yeah, well, picture St. Helens. You couldn't be marching up the valley of St. Helens when it went out, because it would throw out a hot burning cloud and hot dirt and ash. And so here we have a stone cut out of the mountain without hands that smokes the kingdom. So it's not inconsistent. See, New Way Ardant.
What kind of date are we talking about, Jeffrey?
St. Helens. Bigger, a little bigger than St. Helens. New Way is cloud in French, and Ardant is glowing. So it's a glowing cloud that comes out. And there have been different ones. There's been.
I wanted to ask you, like, this last stanza that of Nostradamus says this. It says, at 45 degrees, the sky will burn. Fire to approach the great new city. In an instant, a great scattered flame will leap up, and when they want to have proof of the Normans. I have no idea what that last one is, but I, you know, what that means. But when they want to have proof of the Normans, But he's saying at 45 degrees, the sky will burn. Well, that's kind of like a direct, that's kind of the way that that a comet would come in, wouldn't it? It wouldn't come in at night. It would probably come in at
They can come in on an angle, yes.
Yeah.
Just depending on.
Prior to approach the great new city. Now, that could be, who knows, New York or whatever, you know. And in an instant, a great scattered flame will leap up. Yeah,
well, you have fire in Revelation approaching Rome.
Right.
So,
okay.
When I hear this, you know, I don't know every detail about Nostradamus. I'm hearing all the elements that have been pulled out of Scripture being
rearranged
and put together. Fire approaching the new city. Yeah, there you go. Comet coming in. And the big thing here. One of the rules that if you go to weddings, you hear that and there's a season for this and a season for that, and there's nothing new under the sun. And if you read on in Ecclesiastes 1:19 or Ecclesiastes 3:5, that which is to be hath already been. You should know that if you go up the Banias Valley, there's been a new Ardent there before. That's what that crater is. It's a big crater in the side of the mountain overlooking the valley. And it blew once before. In other words, there's a big volcanic pipe that comes up in there. It's a limestone mountain, but it's got these volcanics, and it's called the Guvta crater, G-U-V-T-A crater.
What date that was? What date that was?
Ancient times. They don't have a firm date, but let's just say within the last 10,000 years. And I spoke to the geologist was there, and they had found bones, and a couple of guys were indeed killed in the process that they found some bones. Who I don't know if it was much of a population there. But also it's on the base of Mount Hermon that Joshua won a great victory against the multinational force that gathered against him, all the Amorite groups, and they're listed, seven different groups gathered together, and then he took them all on, and he chased them right to the foot of Hermon, the Bible says. And important to me, it says God fought for Israel. So now, if a new Ardent occurs at that time, that would be, we even say it now when you buy your insurance, that would be an act of God. And he would have fought for them because that's bigger than any cannon, the blowout. We've seen that this type of thing happen on Mount Pelee in the Caribbean. That's on the Isle of Martinique. That happened in 1902. It killed 30,000 people. The temperature was tremendous. And so we've gotten a taste of that with Mount St. Helens of late. And then we know that down in Indonesia, you got Mount Tambora. And so there have been some real big explosive lateral, not just blowing the top off. You know, that's the standard. But the side of the mountain blowing out. And that is more rare, and that is very bad if you're in the neighborhood on the ground. I remember seeing some shots of National Geographic cars parked, I don't know, 15 miles away, and their headlights, their signal lights, was slightly melted, even at that distance of going on. And so that fits in this syndrome of what comets do. Remember, a comet coming in causes a big earthquake, a lot of shaking. That, in turn, could trigger a volcanic eruption. So that's part of the syndrome. So when you sometimes when you read in Scripture, in Ezekiel 38, and in Revelation, it says a giant earthquake, an earthquake such as the world has never seen. What's causing that? Because a fault that we have here on Earth can't produce earthquakes of those biblical proportions that are being talked about. So that's another way of saying or being told that impacts are involved. And, you know, it's interesting to see that Nostradamus picked up on this. But he doesn't have the formatting, and I would suggest to anybody, even if you're not a fan of the Bible, just ancient material, go read Revelation 8:9 and Revelation 16 and see how they talk about the types of things that you would expect from comet impacts, which, as you've said already, Leo, several times, it's kind of the quick way It's kind of like a nuclear blast without the radiation, except even a four, let's say, a three-mile comet. This is not me. This is an astronomer. If they said if one hit Southern California, Southern California would be raining all over Arizona and New Mexico. That's big. I mean, it would just excavate a tremendous hole. Stuff would be thrown up in the air. It would be coming raining down in the sky. A lot of that stuff would fuse, and that's part of the evidence when we see, when we find out a past impact, that we get fused glass. Rocks like quartz would have shock rings in it, like you hit it with a giant hammer because of the impact. And so there are all sorts of changes in the chemistry and in the minerals around there. Rocks that only form at incredibly high temperatures up here. But the bottom line is, you know, always got me when I read it. I talk about it in the book. Being that I live in Arizona, the idea of California landing on Arizona is kind of makes the point real clear. We're talking about events that a small impact would be, a three-mile impact would be bigger than all our nuclear arsenals put together and detonated at once. You see, we're in a whole other league of power.
And you know, Jeffrey, if I can break in.
Sure.
Yeah. You know, I've been reviewing your book all week. And be truthful, I've had a bit of a problem with it myself.
Okay.
You know, because I think there's so many different variables that I've seen the past from, you know, the time frame that we're talking about. And, you know, Leo and I have been following the Mayan calendar the last 4 years. And I've really have a lot of fun with that, looking at it from a different perspective and watching the evolution of consciousness. And that basically is what the Mayans did. Without getting into it too deep, you know, the last major cycle started 3115 B.C. And we are living that now. And, you know, we've also talked about Greg Braden's work with fractional time. And, you know, there is a time cycle with everything. And, you know, in going through your book, you talk about a comet that hit the Earth in the Indian Ocean back about 2800. The Buckle Crater?
Buckle Crater, yes. 2800
Buckle Crater,
BC.
Yeah. And, you know, I think you you relate that could possibly be one of the reasons why, for the Great Flood, is that correct?
Yes, that it would send out tsunamis, and it's left tsunami deposits in many of the areas, tsunami deposits in India, tsunami deposits in Australia, Africa. In other words, 360 degrees from where it was in the middle of the Indian Ocean. And those tsunamis would be tsunamis of a minimum of 1 mile high. And it would have run right up the Tigris-Euphrates Valley. And the only thing that would stop it would be the mountains of Ararat in Armenia, Turkey.
That's right. I think your illustrations in the book lay that out. But, you know, in relationship to Notre Dame, there was a major solar eclipse on May 2008 BC. You mentioned that in your book. And understand that, you know, when this happened was right after the start of this new cycle, which would put it into the first day. And if you take a look at the last cycle we just went through, we'd be looking at an event that would that you could relate to 9/11, 2001, because this would be on the same basic cycle. And if you want to go back to the start of this cycle that we're in right now, it was a time about 1700s that there was a larger earthquake just off the Pacific coast there in Northern California, which sent a tidal wave, a tsunami over, and I believe over 700 miles of Japan was just washed away. So, you know, under these same cycles, these are major events that happened. Hopefully, these events get less intense than the one before it.
Well, these events that you're talking about, comparatively speaking, would be little pimples. We're talking about big events. An impact for an 18-mile in diameter crater, such as Burkle, you know, people on Earth may not survive that anywhere. That is a really big event. We're talking, over a million times bigger than all the nuclear arsenals put together. The sky would be on fire. There'd be no atmosphere. It would burn off the atmosphere. And we know this not by kind of guessing or doing cycles. We've seen this happen on Mars, where the top half of Mars was literally blown off by an impact. Venus was cooked by an impact, and the surface melted. And the Bible has been very consistent when it says every mountain and valley ran away. To do that, you'd have to have an impactor penetrate the Earth, which they can, and heat up the inside so that the surface, the thing that keeps us from burning our feet, would melt, go back into solution. And indeed, Scripture says there'd be a new atmosphere. It says heaven, same word, atmosphere, and new earth. And so I'm going with all the logic stuff. I have done my share of studies on Maya stuff. I've spoken at Maya conferences. The date that everybody makes a big deal out of is really just no big deal in the Maya world. It's just an end of an age. Nothing has particularly happened in any of their ages before. There are no great predictions of this. This is popular writers putting, hanging all this stuff on there. And
I do agree with you. There's a lot of hoopla, but this is not the end times. This is just the ending of a cycle is starting to do it. There's no doubt in my mind in talking about it. But they talk about the mechanics of this, and they're going back 16.4 billion years. Now, you know, I'm just taking some of the writings by Bowman.
Yeah, the Earth is not that old, though.
No. But I'm just saying that the Mayans, and I'm sure that they're originally an all-planet civilization that landed here, but that's a different topic. But see, that's where I have some problems, just like dealing with the Anunnaki and with Zechariah Sitchin's work with the Earth Chronicles. You know,
see, here we go again.
Yes,
I'm going to give you a bad time. Get ready. The Anunnaki are the same as the Igi gods. You're into an area that I studied. They don't do any of the things that don't have any of the importance that Zechariah Sitchin puts to it. The whole Sumerian writings are all now online. You can go online and look them up. And the way he uses the words about the Anunnaki are not correct. The word, when he uses Nibiru, that's a passing word in a couple of places. And so, kind of like Nostradamus, he made up a whole story about elements that don't exist. His translations ain't so. And if you anyone wants to know, go to the web, look up Zechariah Sitchin, look up Anunnaki. There's a guy there who's a Sumeriologist who's put all his work online. This is all popular hodgepodge. There is no Nibiru. It's been used once in all the Sumerian literature, and it was just some sort of body. But hanging on that, they built up a whole story about it does this, that, and the other, and that's surely in Sitchin's mind. And I know I don't usually get into these, but real archaeologists and Sumeriologists have challenged him to show them in the literature any of the things that he puts in his books, and they're not there. I have personally went online to the monster word concordance. They're not there. And so, see, it gets us playing a silly game. In other words, my fairy tale versus your fairy tale, and but none of it has any basis in fact. That's not what's in the literature. What they have for 2012 is not in the Maya literature. What Sitchin says about the Anunnaki were lesser gods who were to serve the greater gods. And little does he understand, the greater gods were cometary gods. And so the main god was Inanna, who became Ishtar. And as the Semitic people adopted the gods of the Sumerians, and Inanna was a comet. She turned night into day. She tore apart great mountains. She set the land ablaze. She controlled Ishkor, the wild bull of heaven, and his tail with it when he swept, he caused havoc on earth. When he snorted, he opened up pits into which 50 men of Ur fell. And he snorted again and opened up a pit into which 100 men fell. I like going for the interesting stuff, but why doesn't this appear in Sitchin's work and all that exciting stuff about they're probably the greatest source about comet impacts of any ancient group we ever had. All sorts of details describing stuff that we now know to be true. Ninurta, their god, came from Imdugud, cloud of flaming fiery stones, and it's true, and he was seen on the horizon, and it was a big black cloud, which is describing a cometary cloud. I mean, stuff is right on, right on, right on. But the stuff that exists in between the Maya stuff and the Sitchin stuff and some other doesn't exist anywhere. It's just somebody made it up. Some people like it, and they emote from it. I don't know. Is, I'd
the
recommend
sad part them. About it, though, people believe this. And
well,
just by holding
screen.
On to it gives
yeah,
it value.
Yeah, let me do a promo for a movie that you can only get. You got to go to one of the, you know, video places. It starred Richard Chamberlain. It was called The Last Wave. And as I get into all my complications, and, you know, I got this big fat book, and you got to follow along, and you got to really want to be into that and want detail. And most people just want it simple. So The Last Wave... It was directed by Peter Weir. It was the second movie ever, and he is now a big director, producer. In it, it's raining out, and then frogs are appearing, and all these kind of biblical kind of things like Exodus, all these plagues are appearing, but within reason, okay? Big, heavy rains in Sydney, and he keeps having a shaman, an Aboriginal shaman, appear to him in his dreams. So now he wants to know more about the shaman, and he goes on a search, and he finds out that there was still a tribe living in caves underneath Sydney. And long story short, he finds the cave, he goes down into the caves, and on the wall, this is it, this is the heart of what I'm trying to do and the heart of this message. On the wall, he sees a pictograph showing that rainy period that Sydney has. Then next to it, another pictograph showing the frogs and so forth. So there's a series. And in the last pictograph, he sees a huge wave, tsunami, coming. Forget all the science here. He finally emerges from the caves. It leads him out onto the beach, and he looks up, and he sees the tsunami. Sometimes it could be just that simple. In other words, if you were reading the pictograph before The Last Wave, he says A is going to happen, B is going to happen, C, D, E, F, G. You better watch out for H because it's looking good statistically. And so why I'm enthusiastic about the Bible versus all this other stuff is it said certain things happen, and the God of the Bible says he uses comets as his weapons of choice. And so now I go back and I look at these catastrophic events in the Old Testament, and I say, oh, look, there really are comets. That was the weapon of choice. And then he says it's going to be like it was during the time of Moses. It shall be again during the end times. Okay. So that means there should be more comets. Ecclesiastes says that which is to be has already been. And then I go read the seven trumpets and the seven vials, and I see more comet stuff. And I see a logic that the author, the ultimate author, understands comets. He says things that no one knew about comets. Out of their mouths comes fire, smoke, and brimstone. You got a whole bunch of pastors running around saying, oh, this is the big cannon or anything. But it turns out when we took the close-up of Comet Halley and got real close to it back the last time it was here, it turns out it's a very dark object. The whole head is not bright, but there are these little vents, i.e. mouths, and out of it comes fire, smoke, and brimstone. And then the Bible says their power is in their mouths. And yes, when you pass a lot of gas through a small orifice, it's a jet, and the power's there, and the power is in their tails. You got this long tail that adjust the speed, the date of arrival of certain comets, or either late or early, depending on how that tail works, like the rudder of a ship. Now, when I start seeing that this info source, is right about past things, is saying future things that are consistent with the past things, gives me details about how the engine works, put the gas in here, this is what happens, then I am impressed with that source, and I'm not going to mess with other sources until they can meet up to that level. And so, you know, the opening line of my book, everybody is entitled to their own opinion. God bless us all. But not their own set of facts. They're not their own set of facts. And we've got a set of facts now that NASA has uncovered and we're uncovering. Comets have been a big problem during the history of planet Earth. Comets have been a big problem during certain periods of time on this planet, certainly Old Testament times. And it's basically saying comets are going to be a problem.
Can I just interrupt you for a minute? We just lost our stream here, so we're on record time, but that's okay. But what I wanted to ask what your opinion was about the loss of NASA now, NASA closing down. What kind of effect will that have on what we're doing? Or is there, are they just closing down the Discovery program, and or are they closing down NASA altogether?
I think so. Leo, the shuttle program is shut down.
Just the shuttle program. They're still doing a lot of work. Again, they tracked Comet Hartley, too, last fall, and they found out, as I said, that it has cyanide and that it has hailstones, which would approach 100 pounds. No one knew that there were 100-pound hailstones anywhere, yet they're talked about during the end times that each one in Revelation 16, each one, these stones will be coming in, the weight of a talent, which is anywhere from 70 to 100 pounds. No one knew that, but NASA went up, took a picture, and they said, geez, it's in a big cloud, a cloud that's about 20 miles in diameter, and it's full of these basketball to beach ball size
hailstones. Wow.
So when someone tells me that and gives me tips like that, I am going to get up a little closer and pay attention versus generalities and stuff that popular authors have hung on stuff that you can't trace the source. You don't know if it is so or not so. And for me, the greatest example of that is Zachariah Hitchin. I mean, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but the stuff he says does not exist in the real world. If you go look that stuff up, those words are not there. They're not used that way. There is none of that in the literature, and he shows no understanding of the ancient Sumerian Akkadian world. But yet,
he sells a
lot of books.
What kind of time frame are we talking about right now? Relationships to the Bible. They talk about the times.
I don't know. If I tell you, I get my hand slapped. He says no one knows. But
no, I wanted to ask you. Back in 2000, I was just looking here. Back in 2003, some 21 comets hit Jupiter.
Yes, that's what I was talking about. Yeah.
You mentioned that?
Yeah. Well, it was one big comet that broke up.
Oh, it broke up.
And they were traveling in a train.
Like 21 pieces or something,
they were traveling in a train, and one would hit, and then 2 days later, another one, and next week, another two, and next week. And they got it all on living black and white and color.
Wow. And, you know, they also were talking on this thing about comets that recently hit the sun, all right?
Happens all the time.
It happens all the time.
They're saying that we don't
really understand the effect that it has on us, but there has to be some kind of an effect with that kind of a blast, okay, because they have seen these large plumes. Plumes, yeah, thank you. What do you think that the effects are having on us, or is it just got more so more?
No, those are little pimples compared to the sun. When you start to get into the 3 mile on Diana and up, I mean, Tunguska blew a whole big section of forest down. And it was only, they guess, about 100 meters in diameter.
Wow.
In other words, a 300 mile, uh, 300-yard piece, blew down a whole forest, set it on fire, lit up the sky for a few days around the whole world of all the hot stuff that it put up there and the sun and sunlight reflecting off of it. You
wow.
can't fool with comets. Now, you ask when, George asked when, well, the Bible says no one knows, but here's one general indicator in that there are certain political events to take place. Obviously, if Israel is going to be invaded, Israel has to make the invaders very mad. And
well,
they want to invade.
They're working right now, I'll
and,
tell you that.
Pardon?
I said they're working, they're doing very well working on that right now.
Yes, and there are people, you know, you got this regatta that wants to come in and the world's siding, and then they want to go direct to the UN. And who knows, Israel, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they hit Iran before we even think about it. And that would make people mad again. But all of a sudden, while everything has been going good, let's say for the last kind of decades, it's been, you know, frosty. But now people are starting to align against Israel. Europe is. Geez, they've done that before. But as they align, it's telling me, yeah, we're moving in that direction because Israel is the focus. Here's a lot of things that for non-biblical people will shock them. Jesus is coming again, Messiah, if you believe that. I believe that. And the reason he's coming is that in the Bible, God made promises to the Jews that they're going to go through tribulation and they're going to have some rough times, but at the end, rather than him looking bad, he's going to save them. Well, he didn't physically save them from Rome on the first coming. He saved them spiritually. So now in the end, when it looks like the Holocaust was a warm-up for what they call the time of Jacob's trouble, which is mentioned in the Bible, he's going to save him out of there. And in Ezekiel 38:39, we're talking about the armies of the world moving against them. In Armageddon, in Revelation 16, the armies of the world moving against them. And it just seems in this last year with our President Obama and all that's going on, that's becoming a little more real. And why, here's the thing a lot of people understand, why do people pick, why is there anti-Semitism? And here's the answer. God calls the Jews in the Old Testament his firstborn. And if you hurt that, you hurt the apple of his eye. In other words, he had a plan. He plans to save all men. But you got to start somewhere. And so we started with Abraham, who would all call him father. And so if you don't like God, you probably don't like his firstborn. And you can't hit God, but you can hit his firstborn. And so here is a simple biblical reason of why there's anti-Semitism that is built up in the hearts and ways of men, that we pick on them because we really don't like God. And in, if you read in Revelation closely, eventually after some of these impacts, men will still be cursing God. They won't repent, and they'll still be cursing God. Now, it's a matter of, remember with Pharaoh, with Moses, there's certain things happen, and then there's a plague, and Moses, Pharaoh's wise men, this is the finger of God. In other words, something they couldn't do. And so we may be having a rerun of that, that we see a couple of impacts, and they say it's this, that, and the other. That's why the details, so you know this is the one God said happened. And then there's a point where you would think, if you're thinking logically, you would say this is the finger of God. And so this is the whole big issue, because as an anthropologist, I feel that I've learned in my combined with my beliefs that our life here on Earth is really a chance to get housebroken for heaven. For those who don't want to be with God, that's fine. Everybody's going to get their wish. For those who do, they if they've done the things right, they'll get their wish. And so that's what's going on. We have this big game over the course of history and different times and circumstances, but that's where it's all headed to. And it's a game where I don't believe the Earth was just 6 days old. I believe it goes way, way back. But this drive to God reaching out to man directly I believe, is only 4,000 or 5,000 years, because I believe there was a second creation, and they're described differently in the Hebrew. If you look at the letters and stuff, it's a different type of creation. And so that started in the garden. And so that's a relatively recent story, that you had Neanderthals and Cro-Magnon, but then God puts a piece of himself into man. This is Adam and Eve. Adam means, everybody says it means red man. No, it doesn't. It means Dom, blood, and Adonai Dom, blood of God. That's why Jesus is referred to in the New Testament as the second Adam, second blood of God. So these are things, and you've got to wait. I mean, I was 44 years old until I started to understand things, and I had been over those things and thought I knew a lot about them. But now pieces have been falling together, and staying in my own domain, which is geology and archaeology, I've been very, very impressed with what I see when I take it to task. I have done this prior. I once did a book called We Are the Earthquake Generation, where I did discuss Nostradamus, and I looked at Edgar Cayce, and it was better than what we had, because everybody knew, hey, you know, earthquakes and stuff are kicking up and they're around, but they didn't have the logic behind them. And then when certain alignments didn't produce the big effects that was attributed to Cayce and others, it was a failure. And I had a book that was on the bestseller list, We Are the Earthquake Generation. And then when I went to change it and say to the publisher, I want to do an update, you know, they refused to publish it because they didn't want to hurt sales. I then turned around and just withdrew the book. That's why people are like, geez, how come we can't? I withdrew the book if they wouldn't do the update. I mean, we all learn. We all make mistakes. We all think differently now than we thought 20 years ago. And we should be able to do that and grow and take information and piece it together, and everybody works out their plan. And, you know, is it half full? Is it half empty? What does it take? And we're all different. But for the scientific type, the Bible, the point of this book, the concept of God, there's a lot of science in there that's making sense. There's things never seen before, known before, and we're seeing the pieces of how things work. How much does it take? I don't know. Do the events, when they start taking place, is a big rush of people. If the first one hits, like it says, and the forest burns up, and then the second one hits the ocean, the people start to wake up or come on.
Jeffrey,
as you
if
know,
I could say something.
Sure.
I've been following your work, even with the first book. I used to do lectures with that book. And, you know, my hat goes off to you, because being an academic man, you know, you did cross the line, and you were one of the first that went beyond that line and talked about some of this metaphysical understandings and predictions and so forth. And, you know, a lot of the materials didn't come to pass. I mean, we both can look back and see that.
Yeah,
but, you
wrong.
Know, I contribute that to something happened, I really believe, that offset this time cycle that we're in. And I think up until about 1970, everything was on track on, you know, what the elders had to say about the times that we're in and so forth. But since 1970, maybe 71, something happened. And it
Do you have any idea what it was?
Well, you know, I can speculate in this sense, but, you know, I put a lot of credence to, at that time, David Suzuki was working, in fact, he got a Nobel Prize for genetics, I think, in the early 50s. And what he found was that something startling was happening with the sun, with different cycles that it was in. To make a long story short, the helium, the byproduct of hydrogen, ignited, and the energies from the sun has been a mixture of helium and hydrogen. And I don't know if that's the reason why a lot of the magnetics, you know, the Schumann resonance on the Earth has changed, but things have changed.
So
we
say a different burn. We're looking at a different burn now, which creates a different atmosphere setting.
Yes. So, yeah. You know, I'm just saying that the energies around us has changed, and
yes.
even with some of these kids that are being born now, you know, with their DNA, they have more codexes that are actually triggered on. I should say, these are like computer programs of the DNA that my generation, I think there was 20 of them that were activated. And when some of these children are being born now, they have 24 of these codexes that are activated, which science thought that because we didn't need them, we shut them off. But actually, we're turning them on, and we have up to 64 different combinations or computer programs, if you'd want to talk about it, that our DNA can take. But, you know, the point is, Bruce Lipton has done some work with this. I'm just mentioning him as some of the work I've been following with this. But something is happening with our DNA, but also with our energies. And, you know, I think part of this is just a reflection, just our bodies, just like the children now that are being born, they're able to digest foods from all over the world. And the reason why is because they've had to adapt to, let's say, the foodstuffs that my generation, we didn't have such a thing as having foods from all different nations throughout the world at our doorstep, you know, Monday morning. But our digestive system has gotten used to it. But I'm just saying, over a period of time, our anatomy changes, and it's because of the outside environment. And this
yes.
outside environment I'm referring to is from the sun. And I think that's where my question that I have is, and how did it affect us and, let's say, the time that we're on? And because time is not speeding up, but it's the options that life gives us, or if you want to call reality
mm-hmm.
gives us. Now, you know, the superfold, you know, what we had 5, 10, 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree with a lot what you've said. We're dealing with a constantly changing environment.
Yes, yes. It's just trying to keep up with it, is what I mean. So, you know, Jeffrey, I just want you to know, keep doing what you're doing, my friend. I love the book, by the way. And we'll be talking some more on this because it's interesting, the comparisons that I was able to
make. I don't know. I talked to Leo. Leo's becoming, you know, Leo could do the lecture now the rate he's going.
There we go. Well, we both enjoyed your work. I just wanted
to
know that.
Yeah, between the two of you, you'll have to introduce yourself and interview yourself.
I like.
You got me last week,
Jeffrey.
Leo, when you were starting doing the comparisons between the trumpets and vials. I mean,
yeah.
You go to the head of the class. I mean, you would go into some of these churches where you can't tell them anything, unfortunately, and you'd knock them out. You'd slay them right there and tell them to turn to this page and compare these two.
Yeah, no, I want to ask you a question, though, because I just ran into this recently, and the talk about the possibility of a comet between 2011 and 2012.
Helenin?
Yeah, I don't know if it is that or not.
Yeah,
it's
the main one. There's several, but Helenin is the main one.
Helenin, yeah, because that's the one I read about the other day. And but they're talking also about it possibly could split into seven pieces.
Yeah.
That would be your seven vials or your seven, you know, might relate to the as well.
Yeah, I know a little about Ellen, and not big enough to do the job.
Big enough, huh?
No.
Is there anything coming that they've seen or that they're concerned with that might fall within
the... Here's the thing. Are you ready?
Yeah.
It may already be here.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Now, comets don't have to outgas and tell you where they are. The Bible refers to the secrets of darkness. And so... we've learned in this last year that there were some comets that were close by to us that we never realized, but they were hit by something out there, and for a short while, a day or 2 days, they outgassed. And then they, you know, the hole got plugged up, the crust. You see, they have a crust, and then they have a kind of like a Good Humor bar. They got the hard chocolate crust and the soft ice cream inside. And when that stuff gets out, it sublimates and goes right into a gas from the heat of the sun. But sometimes one that's dark and still has a thick crust and is not ready to outgas, you have a meteor smack into it and punches a hole in the side, and then it gases for a couple of days until it seals itself off. This happened with two comets in the spring, and they realized, uh-oh, there are comets in here that we don't know because they don't go off. We don't get to see them. But we saw these two, and we got orbits on these two. And it was like, son of a gun. And so it's kind of like billiards with three balls. You know what I'm saying? You could have one go to another, throw it off. I mean, there's, as you said, thousands of ways to bring this about. It's just going to involve, you know, the balls on the billiard table or the comets in the sky. And so the ones that can do the damage may already be here, or one will come in. Or, you know, here's one. This spring we found MBCs. M is Mickey, B is in boy, C comet. Main belt comets. There was no such thing as a main belt comet. There were asteroids in the main belt in the ecliptic of, you know, the planets going around the sun. And comets come from outside, except these comets have been captured and were going around the sun just like a planet, and they discovered it, and they thought they were asteroids, but again, we had the bump-in process, and we saw that, and these were big babies, I mean, 16, 20 miles, there were comets circling the sun, and their chemical fingerprint was closest to the water in our oceans. So the comets that are very far away are not nearly as close chemically to our ocean water, but the comets, as you get closer and closer, you get more like our ocean water. And indeed, it seems that some of the comets that filled our oceans early on, all right, we had several periods of great comet bombardment that filled it up, they are captured and they're out there, and we don't get to see them. Because unless they outgas, they're dark. They're a secret, as the Bible says, a secret of the darkness. So when, how, those details, I don't know. The only indicator of things for me is keep your eye on Israel and how things go there. Because that's going to be the ultimate thing, as one of the reasons for the Messiah is coming is to save the Jews. Christians are okay, you know, I don't get into that stuff, but they talk about the rapture, and there's great debates, whether it's before, after, and all of that, and I don't like getting into all of that, but it's the original Western. Here comes Messiah riding a white horse, see, we've been ripping off that story, at the end, when all looks lost. You see, I always fantasize about Mount Hermon, which is a 10-mile-long mountain. It's how many miles high? It's very high. It's like 7 or 8 or 9 miles high. It's all surrounded. You got all the campfires. It looks like they'll walk up the mountain and get rid of all the people hiding there once and for all. But then, as it says in the Old Testament, every now and then God fought for Israel, and that now this fellow dressed for battle on a white horse appears on Mount Zion. Not that people interpret Revelation 14 as thinking that's the little hill in Jerusalem. It's not. It's not the Temple Mount. That's Mount Moriah. And they don't pay attention. And if they read in Deuteronomy, they would see that Mount Zion is the highest peak. It says in Psalms that the dew and the frost and the snow of Zion. Well, you're not going to have that in Jerusalem. So he appears on the highest of the three peaks of Mount Hermon, riding to the rescue on a white horse. We have seen this before. Hopalong Cassidy and Tom Mix and go on for there. But Hopalong had the white horse, right?
No. That was the Long Ranger.
The Long Ranger had the white horse?
Yeah, Hopalong had a black outfit, I think.
No.
You know,
who had the white horse?
Oh, yeah.
Miles.
The Long Ranger had a white horse.
Yeah.
Okay, not Hopalong. Hopalong didn't have a white horse?
Gene Hunter had a white horse.
No, I don't think so.
I know. He had
okay, so it's the Long Ranger riding to the rescue.
Long Ranger.
That's the Bible story of the second coming.
There you go.
Hey, you know, I just wanted to mention something here, too. I was reading that that over 100, let's see, where is it? By 1900, 17 comets had been observed at more than one, and I don't know, a perihelion passage, and other, and recognized as periodic comets. But as of November 2005, 173 comets had achieved that distinction, although several have since been destroyed or lost. And have you heard about the Stardust spacecraft that was launched in February 1999?
Yeah, smacked into a comet.
And returned to Earth actually in 2006.
Yeah, brought samples back. Yeah, they haven't released the data yet. But remember, comets are kind of like the kernel. You can get original recipe. You can get extra crispy.
In other words, they could be
tightly consolidated, and so they're almost like an asteroid. Or they could be very loosely consolidated and be a little fluffy. And depending on what comes in, hitting where, you have different effects.
I thought it was interesting that in 100 years, in 100 years, basically, they identified 173 comets.
Look at the craters. They used to be kind of like that. There were only so many craters, and now we're crossing over the line to 200 craters on Earth.
Wow.
We thought that were hard, you know, now they're finding them everywhere. And, you know, you're not going to find them under the ocean. That was brilliant work done by Lamont Daugherty as finding Burkle Crater. I mean, they didn't have a – you understand what they did? They took the satellite and noticed that there was a dip in the surface of the ocean. That's how precise they could measure with those lasers. And then they went over it when they saw there was a dip, a low spot. They went and put a seismograph from the satellite over it and a gravity meter over it. And then they put chips over it and said, yeah, there's an 18-mile crater. You'd never see it. I mean, that's you've got to have a satellite to do that.
You know, years ago, I used to have an atlas, a world atlas, and it would show the waters of the world and also the land under the waters. And I remember the map that I had between Africa and the South America. There was one large crater that was in the water, and you could see it. And somehow I lost that mapping, and I've been trying to find a replacement for it. And the maps that I have, I can't find that configuration of the ocean floor in the same pattern that I've seen before.
I know,
but, it reminded me of, you know, this possible crater in the Indian Ocean. You know, I seen one in the Pacific Ocean. It was much bigger than that. But also, you know, you don't see much about the crater, part of the crater that is part of the Yucatan Peninsula, because I think at one time they...
Yeah, that's Chicxulub, yeah. Well, they're getting all kinds of readings right now.
Over 100 miles.
That's 175. But the one down in Antarctica at 320, that's a big crater. That is a really big crater.
I've been watching
under a mile of ice.
There, Jeffrey, because I know there's 12 active volcanoes down there. And
The crater in Antarctica, when you go through the Earth and come out the other end, remember, you could dig the China. When you come out the other end, you come out into the Russian traps with these huge volcanic deposits in Russia, the size of the United States. So that's what that one did. It got hit down there, and it squirted out juice from inside, magma, and spewed all over part of Russia.
Well, I'm just worried about the Ross Ice Shelf down in Antarctica. I mean, if that breaks away from the main shelf, it could raise some water levels around the world.
Yes.
But, that's another show.
That's another show. Yeah.
If a comet did hit the ocean, and the ocean is, what, two-thirds of the world?
Almost three-fourths. Good. Yeah.
Three-fourths of the world.
A lot of water.
If it landed somewhere in the middle of the ocean, somewhere, would we, like, say one that's a mile wide or whatnot? Would there be any effects felt on land anywhere?
Sure.
If anywhere,
a big tsunami, it could go Chicxulub. you should know Chicxulub sent deposits all the way up to Kansas.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
But that was millions of years ago, wasn't it, Jeffrey?
But where
yeah,
did,
that's
where
65 million years ago.
65, that was a long time.
Where did that fall, though?
It found off the Yucatan in the ocean.
Okay. That's the,
and
that,
then that water threw up and ran a tsunami right up straight north across the United States.
My God.
Yeah.
My God, really?
Yeah, and if you want to see multiple impacts, the Great Lakes. Think about it a second. Go look them on the map. It looks like three or four comets formed, you know, at least two or three of the Great Lakes.
That would make a lot.
Another example, possibly.
Lakes were formed, yeah.
And then the Outer Banks in South Carolina,
yes,
and that whole big embayment, that's a big comet.
Wow.
Yeah, the more you look, the more they find. And so
there's
an irony here in that scientists now say the greatest effect on life on Earth and affecting the Earth at any time is extraterrestrial. Now, that could be the atheist extraterrestrial doing whatever he's doing, or it could be the God of the Bible, or fill in the missing blank. But the greatest effect on Earth, of things on Earth, comes from outside of the Earth. So that's kind of, for me, sneaking
through
up.
Through comet impact, right?
Yeah.
It's
comet is an extraterrestrial object affecting the Earth.
Well, do you believe in an extraterrestrial life, like, you know?
Could be. Could
not
be.
You, right?
It's one of the ones I don't grapple with, but yes, I think something is definitely going on.
How about inner Earth civilizations? Do you believe that?
No, I'm not big on that, but I do believe there is really is a devil, and he's always trying to do something to mess things up. And I think a lot of times when Paul Revere shows up or this one shows up, that's satanic forces fooling around. And yes, I've seen saucers. I had a light show driving back from California to Arizona and one night, and I saw objects in the sky dipping and going up and dipping and going up and doing all that kind of wild stuff.
What did you think it was?
I thought about it for years. I had no idea. Now, you know, I think that was Satan trying to get my attention.
That's as good as anything, I guess. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you can do stuff. You know, he can make a being. It won't live very long. And the unfortunate thing, if you want to see what happens, go take a look at Hitler when they run that show, when he's doing his speeches, and he looks possessed, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's
going to happen, what the Bible says this Antichrist is going to be. That Satan himself is going to slip into this guy. He's going to do stuff and miracles and all of that. And wow.
I think we're going to get some kind of intervention here, Jeffrey. I don't know what the hell it is, but, you know, I got a good feeling about this. It doesn't have to be all bad. And I, for one, am in for the good times. And, you know, heaven is not something I'm looking forward to at the end of my life. Heaven is my journey there, and I really believe that. I'm enjoying life.
I think
like every day there's something new, you know. And, you know, if it's comets that's going to be the end of the Earth, bring it on, you know.
No, it's the end, but then there's
a
restart. After the comets comes the millennium.
Right, yeah, well, 1,000 years of peace.
Well, other things, too. Where guys don't get sick like they do now. It's going to be a very nice time. But here's the point. That heaven is going to be here on Earth.
Yeah. No, I think I'm looking forward to the 28th of October and of this year and moving into next year to see how much of the prophecies comes true, because we're seeing so much of that prophecy fulfilled already. But if that prophecy then links to the Revelation, you know, the Mayans and then the Revelation, print for one hell of a ride in the next year or two. Okay, if that's actually what's happening, what's going to happen if we see asteroids coming in or comets coming in, or whatever. Do you think that we are now in a period where this stuff could be out? You mentioned the Israeli thing, but
I think you're going to see a lot happen politically first.
Yeah, I definitely see that now. But I don't know. Do you see anything coming toward us, or is there anything that we should be aware
of?
No,
I think the world is not miserable enough yet. It's not, in other words, in the Bible is a great line when the before the Jews go into the Holy Land, and they're out in the desert 40 years, and it says God was waiting for the sin of the Amorites to become complete. In other words, he was waiting for political things, that they were doing enough mischief and bad that he felt free and clear to take them on out. And he told the
Moses. I just tonight on the news about the Somalia, Ethiopia, and parts of Africa are in desperate famine, and millions of people dying there now. And of course, that's something, we just had massive floods everywhere around the world.
Yeah, and genocide's going on here, there, and everywhere in Africa.
Yeah, genocide is everywhere, but it's the but also the floods, the earthquakes, the and all of the wars that were predicted in Revelation, or even by Jesus in the Bible. At the end times, this will happen, and you'll hear reports of this and that and so on. But I mean, if there's ever been a time when mankind would hear instantaneously, have access to worldwide events, it's now.
Information is complete.
I'll
leave you with a closing thought here. During the New Madrid earthquake in the early 1800s, you've heard of that one. That's the biggest one that we have here in America.
Okay.
That had 8.7 and 8.9, and there were 13 big ones within 6 weeks, and then 1,500 in the 2 years that followed. You created Real Foot Lake, a 20-mile lake, overnight. Those people, from the people who were living out there, a few people, one of the accounts says people were literally thrown into the air.
My God, really?
That ought to be big enough for anybody.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's still not even a 9.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah, well, it's scary to think about it, but,
yeah.
It could be possibly among us, but we'll see.
Here's the key. Don't lose God's phone number.
I'll remember that one, Jeffrey. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Jeff, Fukushima was a 9.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's out in the ocean. No one was there. In other words, New Madrid literally occurred right under the feet of the people.
Right, yeah.
They were standing on it.
Wow. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, anyway. Jeff,
I think we'll hear some more news on that, but time will tell.
All right. I thank you. I'm sorry we got our signals crossed.
That's all right. We managed to make up the time here.
I know you would have handled it great, and I'll go in a few days and see what you said.
I'd love to have you back again, Jeffrey.
I'd love to do it. You let me know, and we'll rehearse the timing better, though. That's all right.
That's okay.
It's fine for me.
Okay, we'll definitely have you back, Brian. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it very, very much.
Have a good day, my friend.
Look forward to the next encounter.
Okay.
And all right.
For listening, that's Jeffrey Goodman and the Comets of God. And you can go to the website, cometsofgod.com, and check out and some fascinating writing. So thank you again,
book.
Jeff. Appreciate it. Good night.
All right. Thank you.
And George, I want to thank you for being on. And we'll be on next week again. Not next week. Next week. Yeah, we're off.
Next week, Leo.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
We'll be off next week. So we'll be on next week, next Friday night. Okay? So we'll see you then. All right, George. Good night. Yeah, I want to thank everybody for joining me tonight, and I hope you had a great time. Fascinating discussion with Jeffrey Goodman and George Dixon. And please join us again next week. We're off tomorrow, but we'll be back next Tuesday night. And in the meantime, tell your friends about the show, and hope you really enjoyed it. Had a great time tonight. Good night.